Hello everybody and welcome to the Live Work Play Japan podcast. This is where you need to be to learn how to find success living, working and having fun in Japan. I'm Charlie, co-founder of Live Work Play Japan, and I'm fast approaching 5 years living in Japan now, and I'd really like to share with you just a little bit about how I found the kind of work that I've been enjoying and learning from the last few years of my life here. I'm going to talk about the kind of jobs that I got when I first started out in Japan and how those helped me to move to where I am now, which is part-time teaching English in Tokyo, maybe about 10 hours a week, but also freelancing as a web designer and developer and starting my own businesses in Japan. I know a lot of people are really frustrated. A lot of foreigners get frustrated here working Eikaiwa jobs and ALT jobs that just aren't very rewarding for them. Some people get frustrated with those kind of jobs. They get frustrated with the low pay that is quite common in a lot of teaching jobs in Japan. And they get frustrated with the lack of responsibility, the lack of respect they might get from teaching in sort of English teaching schools. And I think a big part of that is that it is actually very complicated. A lot of people come here from the US or from the UK, and especially people coming straight from university. It's a different country, and it's not always intuitive how you're going to find work that's engaging here, the kind of work that you want to do. So I wanted to tell you a little bit about how I ended up here. And actually, I came to Japan in August of 2012, and I'd found a job teaching with Peppy Kids Club. And I've talked about this a little bit on the website before. I've talked about it with a lot of friends and a lot of people who have messaged us. But I think now that I look back on it, Peppy Kids Club was kind of a good way for me to come to Japan. There were a lot of other options. I looked at the JET program, and the JET program has a very long wind-up. It starts in November. The applications deadline is in November, and you don't get to go to Japan until the next year in August. It's a very long and very difficult process. You have to apply, you have to talk to people, go to interviews, you have to prepare a lot of stuff before you can go to Japan teaching the JET program. If you can get it, that's fantastic, but it's not for everybody. And I didn't get through on that one, but I ended up teaching for Peppy Kids Club, and I got put in Fukuoka, which is, for those of you who don't know Japanese geography that well, is the far west of Japan, north of Kyushu. And I was in a tiny little town called Iizuka. It was very far away from the city, like an hour and 20 minutes away from Hakata. And very difficult to get into town and to get out of town. I wasn't particularly happy in my location. It was great to be in Japan, but it was a very difficult place to live. So there were very few foreigners in my town, only really people who worked for my company, and there were a few like jets there as well that I met. But I ended up switching out of that job reasonably quickly and transferred within the company to teach in Nagoya. And Nagoya is it's kind of an interesting place, I guess. Like, there are a lot of foreigners there because of there's a small, almost, it's actually a city called Toyotashi, and so a lot of the people who work for Toyota are in the Toyotashi there. So there are a lot of foreigners and a lot of people doing interesting stuff, not necessarily English teachers. And I learned a lot in Nagoya, like not only teaching junior high school, where I was an ALT at a junior high school, which was very interesting. It was an inner city high school, and it was junior high, and it was inner city high schools. The inner city junior high schools can be very good or they can be very bad. And one of the words that they use here for sort of badly behaved or not very well behaved schools is Yankee. I think it's quite funny. They use the word Yankee to mean badly behaved children. I thought that's quite funny. So my school was kind of a Yankee school. And, a lot of the kids didn't pay attention. A lot of the kids were sleeping during class, and not just my class. You know, I'm not a terrible teacher. They were sleeping just all day. And, a lot of troubles in that school. But I did learn a lot from working there. But it definitely wasn't the right kind of thing for me. And this is one of the things, like the first thing that I think is important to try when you're in Japan is I taught a Peppy, which is, you know, kids aged from sort of 3 or 4 years old or something till 17. And you're teaching kids of all ages, and it gave me a good understanding of which kind of age groups I liked to teach. Teaching a junior high school wasn't for me. But for some people, it's fantastic. They love teaching junior high school. So it's really important to sort of find out what works for you and what you enjoy. Actually, I ended up switching from that to teach in an international preschool. And I'm not going to name the school, but that was the most difficult experience of my life. I was not prepared, really, really not prepared at all. I taught kids at, you know, at Peppy Kids Club, and I thought, oh yeah, it's just going to be, you know, like songs and games and stuff. But as an international preschool homeroom teacher, I was responsible for 11 children for 6 hours of the day. So it wasn't just like a 40-minute class and then they can go home and you can prepare for the next class. It was 6 hours and I was always on task. I had to be paying attention, looking for everything, teaching everything. It was really, really hard. It was a huge change. And there was basically no curriculum at the school that I went to. We had to make me and one of the other teachers, who was a fantastic teacher, I learned a great deal from. We had to come together every week and say, okay, what are we going to do next week? We've got, you know, Monday, we've got the morning, let's do this kind of game or something with the kids and, you know, do some math games and stuff to try and help them with numbers in English and trying to help them count in their heads and things like that. You know, we'd come up with so many different ideas. And we had Japanese co-teachers who would help us in the class. So we took the responsibility for almost everything, the vast majority of the teaching, because we're the native teachers. But the Japanese teachers also really helped a lot. I couldn't have done it without my second Japanese teacher. I had two, actually. The first one that I had was very, very difficult. We basically didn't get along from the very beginning, but she seemed to really, really struggle to work with me. Maybe it could have been just communication style. There were a whole bunch of different reasons, I'm sure. But part of it also was that I really sucked when I joined that school. I was not a good teacher. I was not ready. And, you know, having to, like, even handling something like what they call circle time, where you just sit down with the kids and go through some things like weather and talk to the kids and get them to communicate, you know, just on a regular basis every day so that they have some kind of structure. Because I was teaching three-year-olds. It was very, very hard work. And I couldn't even handle that by myself. I couldn't handle it. And so I think my co-teacher was like, you can't do this. And she actually said, my first week, she's like, you can't do this. You have no idea what you're doing. Like, I can't believe they hired you my first week. So they hired me because I was good with kids and I was good in my demos. And I've always been very good at interviewing and applying for jobs. So, but I just was not prepared. So what ended up happening around Golden Week was it just kind of blew up at that point where we just couldn't work together anymore. And after Golden Week, after we came back, the owner of the school came into my classroom at the end of the day after all the kids had gone home and I was cleaning up, and she said, yeah, you're fired. You can find something else that's more appropriate for your skills. And so I was kind of shocked a little bit by that. And what ended up happening, though, was the next morning I came into school and I told the other teachers about what had happened, and that I'd been fired. Just, you know, in the broader sense, it was because I wasn't good enough to do the job. But I think it kind of felt like I'd been pushed out because I couldn't work with the Japanese teacher, and what it seemed like to everyone else as well, because I'd been working really hard. I'd been going home every night and researching teaching methods. I got really into Montessori teaching methods to help improve my classes. And by that time, you know, 2 months in or so, when I got fired, was I had become a lot better at teaching. I could handle a day by myself, you know, teaching all of the kids. I could plan all the lessons, and I was doing a much, much better job. I'd improved a great deal, but my co-teacher had basically given up trying to help in the classroom. So what ended up happening is there was a lot of meetings at the school, like with, you know, a lot of the foreign teachers as well, who, you know, I told them I got fired, and they were like, whoa, I can't believe you got fired. This is completely unacceptable. They, you know, they felt also very threatened, I guess, by the fact that I got fired, because to their mind, I guess they saw, like, because it's easier to replace a foreign teacher than it is to replace a Japanese bilingual teacher. And that was what they saw. Like, there was a disagreement between me and my co-teacher, and they thought that the school was just, like, replacing me because it was easier to do that than it was to replace the Japanese teacher who, you know, as far as everyone else saw it and as far as I saw it too, it was largely her fault. I felt that we couldn't get along. I was trying my best. I'd complained about it to a friend, actually, and my friend had recommended me a book which really, really changed my life in terms of how I worked with Japanese people in the work environment, which is Marshall P. Rosenberg's book called Nonviolent Communication. I highly recommend that book just for anyone who's working anywhere. I honestly, I think everyone should read it. It's an incredibly good book. So, yeah, so I did carry on at that school, and I finished the year. They rehired me after they realized that they were going to have a lot of problems with the foreign staff if they continued kicking me out. And my co-teacher quit, and she didn't even come in the next day. She was just like, you know what, I can't stand this. And she just quit and just left and didn't care about, you know, the kids, about any of the continuity or anything. So, yeah, that was a really tough time for me. That was when I was thinking, I mean, I'd been in Japan for about 2 years at that point, and I was thinking, like, maybe this is time to quit and cut it and just leave and go back to the UK. And I'm really glad I didn't. I finished that school, and I learned so much from working there, even though it was the hardest time I'd ever had in my life and the hardest time in Japan. I think I learned so much from that position, from working under the stress that I've been working under, and for working with those kids and having so much responsibility, that after that, I think I just had no problem going into a classroom and being confident and being able to teach basically anything. And so that really helped me. I think it's a good lesson to learn, is that even if it seems really tough, it can be incredibly valuable to stay in a position where you might not be enjoying it. I mean, I definitely wasn't enjoying it, but I just learned so much. There was so much to learn from having my own class and teaching in those circumstances. So I think, yeah, that would be the lesson that I took away from that job. And I finished out the year, and I started another company. I joined a very small company that was just teaching a few Eikaiwa classes to kindergarten kids in Nagoya and the surrounding area. And I did that for about a month, and it was really completely, like, this was one of the ones where I could learn nothing. So it was like going back from being a homeroom teacher and having all these responsibilities and having this connection with the students to, it was like going back to Pepe and just having, you know, one class with certain students like once a week. And I didn't get to know any of the kids. I didn't, like, not really. And I didn't really get to have much impact in the work. And not only that, but it was very highly misrepresented to me that how far away the schools were. Some of the schools that I was teaching at for this small company were 2.5 to 3 hours one way, you know, 2 or 3 trains and a bus. Some of them, like, once a week I was going to a school that was down in Gamagori. And so if you live in East Nagoya, I was living in Hoshigaoka at the time, and you look at how, you know, it was like way out in the sticks. It was at least 2 hours from my house. And on the way back, if I didn't clean up the classroom really quickly and get out, then the last bus would go and I'd have to walk for like 45 minutes to the station, which is not fun. It wouldn't have been fun in Japanese summer. Luckily, I didn't get to Japanese summer, but, you know, I told the... Basically, I thought, okay, I need to find something else. I was never told that during my interview process. I was never told that. I was always told, like, oh yeah, it'll be about an hour. But maybe it's an hour if you have a car. But it's not an hour if you don't have a car. And most foreigners here don't. So, yeah, I ended up then, I found, seeing my girlfriend at the time. I had a new girlfriend I was very happy with. And she was really miserable at her job as well. And I was, you know, I was getting tired, like exhausted, even within like I think I quit 6 weeks in. After like a month, I was just exhausted. I never wanted to go to work. I didn't want to do anything. And so we would just talk to each other and say, like, you know what, I'm going to quit my job. I want to move to Tokyo. And she's like, I want to move to Tokyo too. So we went, okay, well, let's move in together and go to Tokyo. So I think we've been seeing each other about 6 months at that point. And we just decided, yeah, let's just move in Tokyo together. And I'm really glad we did. It's been an incredible ride. Like coming to Tokyo, just been a very different life. Tokyo is honestly, like, if I can say anything, I think Tokyo is the place to be if you want to work in the most interesting environments, if you want to build a career, if you want to even like what I've been doing, which is start your own business and do freelancing. Then Tokyo is the place to be. There's so many opportunities here, just constantly, all the time. You don't realize until you come and live in Tokyo how many opportunities there are here. So I'm really glad I came to Tokyo. I basically, as I was looking around for jobs, I saw a TED talk about the kindergarten I ended up working at in Tokyo. And I'll post a link in the show notes below, but it just seemed like the perfect school. I'd been studying Montessori method as well, and it said it was a Montessori school, and I thought, yeah, I definitely want to apply there. So I applied, I sent an email, and this is one of the things we talk about in the book that's coming out August 4th, is the direct method of applying to schools. So I put a lot of templates and a lot of ideas like how you can apply directly to a school that you like the look of. This is a really great way to get a job, and it really worked for me because I immediately set myself out from other people who might apply through jobs boards or might apply through an intermediary. I, you know, showed myself as someone who's a go-getter. So I got the job almost immediately. I got offered the job on the spot when I went for interview, because they were very impressed by not only the work that I'd done, and, you know, I'd earned the ability to work at a kindergarten by working in an international preschool and struggling and becoming a better teacher and having all these principles as a teacher. I think that's another important thing, is to show when you are working, when you're looking for a job, when you're interviewing, to show that you're a passionate teacher. You're not just, oh yeah, I want a job because I really want to live in Japan. This is what I call a holiday English teacher. It's someone who wants to just take a holiday in Japan and wants to live here, but is just teaching English because it's a way to pay the bills. So I think for me, doing that and showing myself to be a great teacher was really helpful, and that's how I got the job for sure. So I ended up working at Fuji Kindergarten. It's a world famous school, world famous kindergarten. You can take a look at the TED talk, and the pay was also incredibly good. It was the best pay I'd ever gotten, with like bonuses of more than a month's pay during the year. They paid like health insurance and pension, everything. I was making more money than I'd ever made in Japan up to that point. And it was really good to get to that point and feel like, oh, I've done something different. I'm working somewhere that's different from, the normal AET or Eikaiwa way that most people go. So after a year of being at that place, I'd been working on the website Live Work Play Japan since February with Martin. We both started the website, and it was getting some traction. A lot of people were talking about it. Like we'd been a little bit too aggressive with it. I felt like we were sort of spamming Facebook groups with this stuff, but a lot of people were interested in what we were talking about, which is getting interesting jobs and, you know, interview skills, job hunting skills and things like that. And so I ended up, actually in April, I quit that job. Even though it was, you know, famous school, and actually I still work there. I say quit. I went part-time at that job, and I found a lot of other part-time jobs and put them together such that I was earning a lot more money per hour than I could have ever earned in a full-time teaching job. And, you know, I looked at all of the opportunities that I had, and I was working maybe between 10 and 20 hours a week and making about the same salary. And I got a few opportunities in the middle of the year to start doing web development, which is something that I've been doing myself for a long time. And some people said, oh yeah, I know this guy, Charlie, he makes websites, he's really good at it, you should hire him to make yours. And I got one or two clients very quickly, and then those clients told other people, you know, oh yeah, Charlie made a great website for me, you know, you should hire him. And all of a sudden I had a whole bunch of web clients, which was really cool. I've been freelancing for a while, and actually I double checked to make sure that it was okay for me to do that under my visa. And this is something that a lot of people are worried about. And I wrote a whole article about it, about your working rights in Japan, which I'll put in the show notes. But there's two different visas that people tend to come here on. And there's an instructor visa and there's a humanities and international services visa. And luckily for me, when I got my visa renewed while I was teaching at Fuji, the visa for humanities and international services was combined with the engineer visa. So it allowed me to be able to do things like my web development and stuff. So a lot of people that I know now in the software development industry in Tokyo, they all have the same visa as me. So I can do that. And I double checked with immigration. I went to immigration. I went to town hall. And all you have to do is file file forms for Kojin Jikyo no Shi, which is a sole proprietorship. So you're basically like, you say that you're a freelancer and then you just file separate taxes for any work that you get as a freelancer. It's really, really easy. It's incredibly easy. And I was scared about it for a long time and I was worried like, oh no, I need a full-time job so I can do this and this and this. But actually, I was able to make a lot more money last year than I was the year before because of doing part-time work and because of doing my freelance work. So fast forward to today, and I'm still working at Fuji part-time, teaching my own class like 4 times a week, which is really good. I really like that class. And the other jobs that I get, I almost never work for less than maybe 3,500 yen per hour. I do a lot of different work with a lot of different schools and also a lot of different web clients. And yeah, it's been a really enjoyable time for me. So that kind of brings me to the book that we wrote. We're just about to release that as I'm talking to you. We're just about to release that in the Kindle store. We, Martin and I, worked together on this book for a long time. November last year was when we first released a version of that book. And it was basically, it was a tester to see if it was something that people were interested in. You know, we thought, oh, this is really great. We're really interested in this. But actually, we weren't sure if people would be interested in something that was really focused on strategies of getting English teaching jobs and tactics to implement. And we got a really good response from that. I think several hundred people signed up for it. A lot of people were really interested and talked to us about it. And we had a lot of feedback from people in our community, the people who read it and said, well, this is really great, but actually I don't think this is going to work. And, you know, there's not enough detail here. And a lot of people were asking for more, not only more stories and more, you know, more things to say this is possible, but also like more detail on what we've been saying. Because we said, oh yeah, you should do this, and then they were saying, well, how do I do that? I don't know, like a lot of sections about that. So we doubled down on the book. We worked really hard on it. The last, I think, maybe 3 months we've been working on this, and I've been, you know, working part time. I work from home a lot, so I'd been working on it almost every day. Putting several hours into writing extra content, and I think we tripled the amount of pages in the book, or more than that, I think, and just did a lot of work onto this so that we could make the best possible book. So anyway, we decided that we were going to release this on the Kindle store, on Amazon, and it's definitely something that I'm really proud of. We've done so much work on this, and we've been talking about it with our audience for a while, and I really hope that everybody's going to really enjoy it and everyone's going to be able to learn something from it. And I mean, it's only $10. It's something that I think if you follow the strategies, if people who are living in Japan now and who have just even a little bit of experience, they follow the strategies and follow the roadmap that we've laid out here, then they could be finding jobs like I did, where I'm earning, you know, an extra 20,000, 30,000, you know, 50,000 yen per month. From just employing the strategies that we've talked about in this $10 ebook. And we're going to be publishing a paperback version soon, which is going to be very, very exciting. I'm really looking forward to having a book in paper that I wrote. I want to have it in my house and I want to give it to my friends. And I want to see like the kind of response that we get from people. I'm really excited to see the kind of response that we get from people from this book. So, yeah, I think I'm going to start, I'm going to call it here. So, this has been Charlie Moritz talking for Live, Work, Play Japan podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And please do sign up for our mailing list as well. I do my best every week to send very useful and valuable information to people, and also to help inspire them. I've had a lot of people, I've talked with a lot of people from our community, met them for lunches and for coffee and stuff, and just to help inspire people to motivate change. That's a big part of the equation as well. It doesn't matter if you have all the tactics, if you're not motivated to make a change and to find something that's going to work for you, that's going to improve your life, that's going to make you so much happier at work, then there's no point in even trying, you know, if you haven't got that motivation. So that's one of the things that we try to do with our newsletter, is to provide constant and lots of motivation for the kind of people who, you know, like us, people like us who want to find success in Japan.